A Midday with Howie Lim replay from Money FM 89.3.
And in Mind Your Business, we look at the SME sector here. It powers half our economy, hires 70% of our people, and there are 99% of enterprises here in Singapore, which are SMEs. Now, what made two Ivy League graduates, one from Harvard and Princeton, we can only dream about having an education there, leave high-flying corporate jobs to start their own gym? And how is theirs standing out in the competitive and saturated fitness market? We're joined by co-founders of Boom, Brian Tay and Victoria Martin Tay. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure to be here.
So waking up early mustn't be a strange thing for you.
Not
it's for me,
all.
Though.
This wasn't considered early.
But then
worry.
Again, 10 o'clock's not early. Yes, you're right. So, Brian, tell us, how did the engineering background help?
Well, that would be me.
That would be Victoria with the engineering background, yes.
That's right. That's something I've been really, really proud of. Engineering in education itself actually helped to teach me a lot of things, one of which problem solving, which obviously I can use in any sector that I go to. You know, taking a very messy system and finding some sort of balance, some sort of logic in any of it, and finding a solution is something that I've used in all my jobs prior to opening Boom and currently in Boom as well. But the big thing about the engineering degree, even though I didn't have a finance degree, is that it helped me a lot in financial modeling and making projections and actually coming up with a business proposal, you know, for eventual investors and people that we were talking to for partnerships and such. So I didn't have a finance background whatsoever, but having a base in engineering actually helped me to do all of that financial modeling without too much difficulty.
Without being too simplifying the whole thing, these days you can really find everything on the internet. You can sort of learn it yourself.
Exactly.
At your own detriment, perhaps.
As long as you're willing to learn,
yes.
It's out there for you to learn. So you just have to go look for it.
And for you, Brian, how did the competitive swimming background help? Made you the pit bull of the whole operations.
No, actually, this one's
still
the pit bull.
Still is Victoria.
Am I? Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, I spent most of my life swimming, right? And I think it really did teach me the meaning of hard work. I mean, if you're in the pool 11 times a week, that's crazy, right? That pretty much is your life. But it also means that you have to balance schoolwork, you have to balance work with your training schedules. And at the end of the day, it's really how much you want it. Right, and that really is the basis of how far I'm willing to push myself every single day.
As an athlete, that makes sense for you to move into this space.
Correct.
And now Victoria is saying that the engineering background helped as well. But you also weren't, say, the biggest fan of being fit in the beginning.
No, I was not. Well. You know, when I was growing up, and when my secondary school and primary school friends look at me now, we all kind of have a little bit of a laugh.
Victoria?
Yeah, exactly. Who am I? I used to be one of those last to come in with my 1.6 km or 2.4 km run. I really struggled. There are times I even ask, you know, my parents to just write a little letter so I don't have to do PE. You know, I was one of those. But for me, when I was...
Did you have some physical or medical problems, perhaps?
No, I was just unfit.
Just lazy.
You know, like a lot of other people, just lazy. Exactly. And even so, even now, as I'm a lot fitter and at my fitness prime, I would like to think, that I still have those lazy days, which makes us as people, not even instructors, but makes us as people very relatable to our customers. And they see that if we can do it, if we can pull ourselves out of that laziness one day or 3-4 days a week, then obviously they can do it too. And that's the truth. We've seen a lot of them transform.
So which came first, the fitness or the wanting to open a gym?
Definitely. For me, the fitness, I think starting a business is just scary. you know, there are no two ways about looking at it. It's scary. The fitness and the passion for teaching was what came first. We were both the part-time fitness teachers for about 3 years before we opened Boom. And this was on top of our day-to-day corporate job. Yep. So we spent almost every waking moment outside of the office teaching. You know, I would teach a few times a week. He would teach a few times a week. And that's when really our close friends and family looked at us and said, hey, you know, why don't you consider starting a business? And that's when it really started.
Yeah, you need
to
sleep at some stage, Victoria, Brian, right?
What a sleep.
So tell us, forgotten what it was, the concept. Okay, how challenging was it though to start? I imagine location, finding the right people to help you out, financing. Yeah.
So we took actually over a year to find a location. We really had a goal of what we wanted to find when we were looking for a location. So we went through
Talk us through it, because say for an F&B outlet, foot traffic's the most important perhaps.
Right.
For a gym, what would that be?
So there are a couple of things that we have to take note of. Number one, we had to find out whether they would allow showers. Number two, it's the change of use. You need to apply for a change of use because most of the spaces we're looking at were used as office spaces to start off. So you need to apply for a change of use as well. One more thing is that you need to look out for the sound pollution that we cause because we play pretty loud music in classes. There are weights in the classes, so we need to be aware of what's around us and how much money we can put in to spend soundproofing the space. Of course, we had ideal spaces where we wanted to be in the CBD. We want to be in between the old part of the CBD, the Raffles Quay area, versus the Tanjong Pagar area. So we wanted to be in the middle of that as well.
Why was that important to you?
You're right about us thinking about wanting to be close to where our customers are. You know, I think we already know this, that I can be lazy, so can our customers.
Yeah, so the further away the gym is.
Exactly. Even if it's walking to a workout, they won't do it. You know, they'll take a grab 5 minutes to get to a workout. So you needed to be really, really close to where the people were so that they wouldn't make an excuse to skip that workout. So a lot of people would, you know, suggest moving outside of the CBD because we're, you know, starting out as entrepreneurs. We might not have super deep pockets. So, you know, why don't we look at places outside of the CBD for lower rent? But I always say that when you move further out, the decrease in rent cannot make up for the decrease in amount of business that you have. Mm. So sometimes it actually is worth paying a little bit more to earn more, because even if we moved outside, say we couldn't get enough people to our classes, we might not even pay that rent even if it were less.
But we are seeing a trend of people wanting to be healthier, eating healthier as well, and moving more. But we also remember a couple of years ago how this large chain of fitness centers just closed shop. Mm-hmm. Were there concerns about how Boom might survive, or why did you decide to venture into this pretty saturated space, I have to say?
Maybe not personally. We didn't have personal concerns. But when we talked to our family and friends who obviously understood fitness as, you know, the years of California Fitness and all these mega gyms. But for us, because we are very familiar with the boutique fitness gym culture, and, you know, we spend quite a bit of time in New York and Los Angeles where this is pretty much daily life. And I think we've also found a trend in people in our generation and those slightly younger than us that they want more than anything freedom. They don't like being tied down, whether it's a job or a relationship or even working
any
out.
Any aspect of life, really.
So they need that flexibility and freedom. And so we thought, even though, you know, our family members and close friends were skeptical, we were very confident that, that Singapore would eventually catch on to the trend as well.
How do the family members and friends feel about the turning your back on your Ivy League education? Got to ask that as Asians, right?
Well, you know, my parents are very supportive. When growing up, my dad always told me that, you know, the end of the day, you should have your own business. You should be your own boss at the end of the day. So
regardless of what it was?
Exactly.
Okay.
So initially, he wanted me to be a doctor because he's a doctor.
Of course.
Of course. And when that didn't work out, and I went to my corporate jobs, and he was, you know, every day he would tell me, you know, if you want to open a business, you know, we're here for you. They're very supportive in that sense. And you know, I was very lucky.
So my mom has been in human resources all her life, and she's all about human capital management. So every time we talk to her about jobs and careers, she always talked to me about job fit. And I think the more conservative side of her is always worried about, you know, will I be able to be self-sufficient?
But Gen Xers do that.
Of course, yeah. Of course. But for the most part, her, you know, she understood that I wasn't very happy in all the other jobs that I was doing. And at the end of the day, any parent just wants to see their child happy. And we live without parents now, they're willing to obviously take us in under their roof. So they've been very supportive in that sense. But I think my parents have been a little more skeptical, but both of them have only worked in careers that they have studied for. And my parents are in their 70s, so I guess that's what most of them and their peers know.
Yeah, bringing back that Gen X sensibility, that's all we know. Mm-hmm. We studied something that we would go and do.
Correct.
And stay in that job for decades. So this might be a little hard to understand, I think, for the generation.
Just a little
X.
Caveat on my end. My granddad started his own business. I do have a
little. So it's family legacy.
It's kind of
right?
a family legacy to start your own thing, I guess. And that's where my dad got that idea from as well.
Who needed the convincing when the Boom idea came?
Neither of us.
Neither. Oh, great.
I think we both loved teaching so much. And compared to our corporate jobs, it provided, you know, a sense of meaning. You know, sometimes you work behind the desk and you always ask yourself, to what end? Who am I really helping? And even though we would teach 3 or 4 hours a week, you know, each of us, that provided sometimes a lot more meaning to us than our day-to-day jobs, even though that provided a sense of accomplishment. But our teaching profession brought us a sense of meaning.
Yep. So a year in, how's Boom doing? What would you say is your unique selling point, say, to other sort of boutique gyms?
Yeah, we're always cautiously optimistic when someone asks us about how Boom is doing because, you know, we're still quite knee-deep into day-to-day operations. So whenever someone asks us, how's Boom doing? We're like, you know, could
I
be better.
I want to say good.
We want to say good,
so
for
hard.
Sure. But we always say, you know, it could be better. Being who we are, we always think that, you know, we could be doing something better. We could be optimizing our flows even better. We could be training people even better. We could be making different different tweaks to our programming sometimes to make it even better. At the end of the day, we do need to take a step back sometimes and look at it from an objective point of view and say, you know what, it's been 1 year. I think we've been doing a pretty good job.
Quite a bit, yeah.
Do you feel that maybe you're a bit too micromanagey?
As any business owner will tell you, within the first, I think, you know, year or two, you kind of have to be. It's your baby. It's your life savings. You know, we don't have a child yet, so this is our baby, and it has almost defined our first 2 years of marriage. Yeah. So we don't want anyone else to come in and destroy our dream. You know, we've hired people that we entrust. We have to slowly, in a very staggered way, start to step back. Which we're trying to do. But we've been, I think, objectively, when we look at it, we have been doing well. It's just we are so scared to say it. It's almost
trying
like...
to jinx it.
You have to sing it, right?
Positive affirmations and that sort of thing, putting you in the right mindset for outlet number two, maybe.
Yes.
Is that in the pipeline?
Oh, yes, definitely. We're currently trying to finalize a space for it, hopefully in the area.
That's always the hard part. Yeah, that's always the hard part. I think we're reaching capacity at our current space and with our current instructors. So we actually just got done training a batch of quite a few instructors in preparation of probably a second location in the next few months, in the next quarter or so.
What other challenges are you facing at this present moment, though? You're training your people, so labor crunch doesn't affect you per se.
Oh, it does. Staffing, I think, with any big or small company will always present an issue. It's hard to find that perfect alignment between availability, personality, character, and, you know, work ethic and all these things.
That sounds like your mom's HR spiel coming into you.
Exactly.
So,
you know, I mean, I speak to her about it and she always says, sometimes you have to prioritize what are your non-negotiables and then you look for that, because a lot of the times we personally believe that fitness can be trained, but character and work ethic is something that is innate. So when we interview people, we look for that. It's just it's hard to find. It's very, very hard to find because a lot of people think the fitness industry is fun. They don't think of it as work. And when you're looking for staff, it is work. And we want them to view it that way, but not lose their sense of wonder when it comes to enjoying teaching, when it comes to having fun.
It's a balancing act.
It is a balancing act.
Is there a prerequisite to work with you guys that your staff be fit or be willing to take part in classes, for example? You've got to test the product out before you're able to talk about it, so to speak.
We had this issue with our first batch because it was all up in the air at that point because we didn't have a space yet. We wanted to train instructors before we got the space so that when we got the space, we hit the ground running. What we were looking for mostly was that they were willing to learn. They were willing to get fit. They were willing to take what we say and put it to work. And that's what we did find with a lot of the instructors that we have now. But everything else can be trained, as Vic said. And if you're not the fittest person, that's okay coming in. The point of it is that you learn more from us as well.
And give us 5-6 weeks with someone, maybe 3-4 times a week. You can make anybody fit as long as they're willing to do that. You don't even need a year of training, you know, fitness training. You just need a couple of months and hard work from our potential staff or instructors.
Is there a 5-year plan though, Victoria?
Well, personally and professionally, there definitely is. So, you know, apart from opening fitness studios, we want to move into adjacent spaces because personally, we started this business as naive as it is to want to help. you know, to want to provide a community that we felt was safe and that our customers wanted to be a part of. So we actually make it a point to make our branding and our experience very friendly, very unintimidating, and try to bring people from all walks of life with one common goal, and, you know, that's to be well. So obviously the wellness industry and the wellness space extends far beyond fitness and, you know, to mental health, to physical recovery, to nutrition. And that's, those are things that we eventually want to get into. And that's the next step, not only for us, but for our customers as they get fit with us to actually take into account. I found it's usually when people start making money, you know, they start buying material things. But after that, they realize their health suffers. You know, they're spending a lot of money drinking or enjoying themselves. Then they start putting a lot of money into fitness. But then they, after a few years, they ask themselves, are they happy? You know, they think about their mental well-being. So there is a natural progression of things. And we see that in not only in the industry, but in Singapore, too.
Look at our website. It's very colorful. Because Vic and I, we're not the coolest people. We're very dorky.
What nonsense.
Super dorky.
So apparently what's on trend is this black and white minimalist thing that everybody loves. The clean lines, clean look. But we love color. And we sometimes feel that we should have been born in like the 70s and 80s where that was such a thing. My jeans are covered in paint splatter. Or some, you know, it's just something that's very us. And I think there are a lot of people that are like us, and we wanted to create a space and environment for them to find home, you know, to find a sense of belonging.
So no more excuses for you if you're sitting on your couch, right? Let's get off it and make 2019 a fit year. Boom Singapore is where you can find them. BoomSingapore.com. Co-founders of Boom, Brian Tay and Victoria Martin Tay, joining us today. Guys, thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.